Welcome to Vintage Voices, a production of the Radio Players of the Theater Company of Sun City. Our show airs on Sundays at 11 a.m. and Wednesdays at 12:30 p.m. on 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. Today's play is The Problem of Thorbridge, a Sherlock Holmes murder mystery by Arthur Conan Doyle, first published in 1922 in The Strand magazine as part of the Casebook of Sherlock Holmes series. Its first radio airing was on October 1, 1945. The cast includes Russ Howard as the announcer and Cesar, Joyce Scott as Miss Dunbar, Del Smith as Dr. Watson, Bob Holding as Neil Gibson, Dave Strang as Sergeant Coventry, and Alan Scott as Sherlock Holmes. I'm Ed Dennis. The play was directed by Jan Dennis. It was recorded by Jim Eggers. Music and sound effects were added by Anthony Rios. And now, The Problem of Thorbridge.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. We invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective Sherlock Holmes. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening.
You've hinted that a beautiful girl figured prominently in your adventure.
That's quite right. An extremely beautiful girl. You want to hear the story that I called The Problem of Thorbridge.
How did it begin?
On a windy morning in October, in 1890 it was, as I was dressing, I observed how the last remaining leaves were being whirled away from the solitary plane tree which graced the yard behind our Baker Street house. I descended to breakfast, prepared to find my companion in depressed spirits, for like all great artists, he was easily impressed by his surroundings. But to my surprise, he was in an unusually gay mood. As I entered the room, he looked up at me, and with a smile, he spoke.
Good morning, my dear fellow. I hope you slept well.
Wonderfully. Thanks, Holmes.
I'm so glad.
Well, you're very solicitous this morning. I think you must have got a new case. Am I right?
Yes, I have a new case. After a month of trivialities and stagnation, the wheels revolve once more.
Good. Tell me all about it.
Well, have you heard of an American, Neil Gibson?
Neil Gibson? Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Something to do with gold mining, hasn't he?
A great deal to do with it, my dear fellow. In fact, he's considered the greatest mining magnate in the world. About 5 years ago, he bought a large estate in Hampshire. Perhaps you've read of the tragic death of his wife.
Oh, yes. Of course, I remember the case now. She was murdered by a jealous governess who was in her employ, wasn't she?
That point will be decided when the lady in question, Grace Dunbar, comes up for trial at the forthcoming Winchester Court. In any case, it's hard to see what I can do for my client at this late date.
Your client?
Oh, yes. I forgot I hadn't told you. You'd better read this letter. Came this morning.
Let's have a look. Dear Mr. Sherlock Holmes, Miss Dunbar is innocent. I can't see the finest woman in the world go to her death without doing everything possible to save her. I shall call on you at 10:30 tomorrow morning to discuss the matter. Yours faithfully, Neil Gibson. Good gracious me, do you know anything about his dead wife?
Only what I've been reading in the papers. Apparently, she was past her prime, which was the more unfortunate as this Miss Dunbar, who cared for the two young children, is reputed to be a very attractive young lady.
Oh, the eternal triangle, eh? Well, where did the murder take place?
On Gibson's estate in Hampshire. His wife was found on the grounds nearly half a mile from the manor house, late at night, clad in her dinner dress, with a shawl over her shoulders and a revolver bullet through her brain.
Oh, any weapon found near her?
No, there were no clues found at the scene of the crime.
What made them suspect the governess?
Well, some very incriminating evidence. A revolver with one discharged chamber was found on the floor in Miss Dunbar's wardrobe.
Oh, was it? Pretty damaging evidence, Holmes.
So the coroner thought. And to make the case even blacker against Miss Dunbar, the dead woman had a note on her making an appointment at that very spot, and the note was signed by the governess.
Well, it seems obvious that the girl's guilty, and the motive's clear. Mr. Gibson would be a great catch for a young girl.
Possibly, Watson, but circumstantial evidence can be very misleading at times. Ah, there's the gentleman in question. Unless I'm very much mistaken, considerably before his time.
Well, I can see him from the window here. Formidable-looking fellow. Must be well over 6 foot tall. Mrs. Hudson's opening the door for him now. Up here, sir.
Are you Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
No, no, indeed. I'm his colleague, Dr. Watson. Come along in, won't you?
Mr. Neil Gibson, I presume?
That's right. So you're the great Sherlock Holmes, huh?
The adjective is your own, Mr. Gibson. Sit down, won't you? By the way, you may speak quite freely in front of Dr. Watson.
Mm-hmm. Well, I may as well begin by telling you that the money means nothing to me in this case. You can burn it if it's any use to you in lighting the truth. Miss Dunbar is innocent, and it's up to you to prove it. Just name your fee.
Mr. Gibson, my professional charges are on a fixed scale. I don't vary them except when I omit them altogether.
Very well. I imagine that you read the newspaper reports of the coroner's inquest. I don't see that I can add anything more that'll help you, but if there are any questions you'd like to ask, I'll answer them.
Well, thank you. First, what were the exact relations between you and Miss Dunbar?
I suppose you're within your rights in asking such a question, Mr. Holmes. I can assure you that my relations with Miss Dunbar were always those of an employer towards a young lady whom he never conversed with or ever saw, except in the company of his children.
Ugh. I'm rather a busy man, Mr. Gibson, and I've no time or taste for aimless conversation. I wish you good morning.
What the devil do you mean by this, Mr. Holmes?
My dear sir, the case is difficult enough without your giving me false information.
Meaning that I lie, sir?
I was trying to express it as delicately as possible, but if you insist on the word, I won't contradict you.
Why, you confounded...
Don't be noisy, Mr. Gibson. Please, don't be noisy. I find that after breakfast, even the smallest argument is unsettling.
I suppose I can't make you take the case. But you've done yourself no good this morning, Mr. Holmes. I've broken stronger men than you. No man ever crossed me and was better for it.
Good morning, Mr. Gibson.
Upon my soul, Holmes. You were unusually severe with him.
I dislike liars, Watson.
How did you know about his relations with the governess?
I didn't. It was pure bluff.
Bluff? Well, it certainly worked. Think he'll come back?
Oh, of course he will. He needs my help too badly. He'll probably change his mind before he's halfway down the stairs. Come in. Ah! Mr. Gibson, just saying to Dr. Watson that I was certain you'd be back.
I've been thinking it over, Mr. Holmes, and I feel that perhaps I was hasty in taking your remarks amiss. Just the same, I can assure you that the relations between Miss Dunbar and me really don't affect this case. I can give it to you in a very few words. To begin with, I met my wife when I was gold mining in Brazil.
Your wife was Brazilian by birth, wasn't she, sir?
Yes, doctor, and very beautiful. Well, to make a long story short, I fell in love and married her and brought her to England. After a few years, I realized that we had nothing in common.
And then this young governess, Miss Dunbar, arrived on the scene.
That's right, Mr. Holmes. Well, the story should be obvious to you from there.
You fell in love with this girl, I suppose, sir?
Who could help it? Now look here, Mr. Holmes. I came to you on a question of evidence, not of morals. I'm not asking for your criticism.
It's only the young lady's sake that forces me to touch your case at all. Now tell me, sir, what is your own opinion as to Miss Dunbar's guilt?
It's very black against her. I can't deny that. One explanation of the tragedy did come into my head, Mr. Holmes. I give it to you for what it's worth.
Pray continue, Mr. Gibson.
My wife was bitterly jealous. She was half crazy with hatred. She might have planned to murder Miss Dunbar, or we'll say to threaten the girl with a revolver and so frighten her into leaving us. There might have been a struggle in which the gun went off and shot my wife, who was holding it.
The revolver, Holmes, was found on the floor of the governess's wardrobe.
Mr. Gibson, I should like to examine your house and the scene of the murder as soon as possible.
Certainly, Mr. Holmes. Sergeant Coventry of the local police is still down there. He'll give you any help you may need.
Excellent. Watson, old fellow, fetch the timetable. We're catching the next fast train to Winchester.
So if I have to have someone else on the case, I'd rather have you, Mr. Holmes. Yard is called in, then we local police loses all credit for success. Generally gets blamed for the failures. Now I've heard you play straight.
I need not appear in the matter at all, Sergeant Coventry. If I can clear it up, I don't ask to even have my name mentioned.
Well, that's handsome of you. I'm sure now. I know your friend, Dr. Watson, can be trusted, too.
Don't worry, my dear fellow. We won't steal any of your thunder.
Well, that's nice and friendly of you, Doctor. Well, come on, gentlemen. I'll walk you down to the bridge. That's where we found Mrs. Gibson's body. Not far from the house here. Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Sergeant.
There's a question I'd like to ask you. A question I wouldn't ask anyone else. Don't you think there might be a case against Mr. Gibson himself, sir?
I've been considering that possibility.
That there, Mrs. Dunbar, is a bit of all right. You ask me. He wanted his wife out of the way. And the pistol she was shot with was his pistol, you know.
Oh, was that fact proven?
Yes, Doctor. It was one of a pair that he had.
One of a pair? Where's the other?
Well, Mr. Gibson has a lot of firearms. We never quite matched that particular pistol, but the box was made for two.
Well, if it was one of a pair, surely you'd be able to match it.
Well, we have them all laid out at the house, if you want to look them over.
We'll do that later. Ah, this, I presume, is Thor Bridge.
That's right, sir. Found Mrs. Gibson's body right here at the approach to the bridge.
I see. I gathered from the newspaper reports that the shot was fired at very close quarters.
Yes, sir. Very close.
Near the right temple, wasn't it?
Just behind it, sir.
How did the body lie, Sergeant?
Oh, on its back, Doctor. No trace of a struggle, no marks, no weapon. The note from Miss Dunbar was clutched in her left hand.
Clutched, you say?
Yes, sir. We could hardly open the fingers to get at it.
Ah, that's of greatest importance. It excludes the idea that anyone could have placed the note there after death in order to furnish a false clue.
What did the note say, Sergeant?
It just said, I will be at Thor Bridge at 9 o'clock, and it was signed Grace Dunbar.
Did Miss Dunbar admit writing it?
Oh, yes, sir.
What was her explanation?
She wouldn't say nothing. Said she was saving her defense for the trial.
Yes, it seems odd that Mrs. Gibson was still clutching that note.
It seems perfectly natural to me.
Oh, come now, old fellow. Argue the thing out logically. Doesn't it strike you as rather strange?
Well, now, it does seem a little peculiar.
Hello? Did you notice this, Sergeant?
Oh, you mean that chip out of that stone on the underside of the parapet of the bridge, sir? Yes, I noticed it. Didn't think nothing of it, though.
Not a very large chip.
Yes, but it's been done recently. Notice how the stonework is wiped just here. It took some violence to do that. Hand me your cane, Watson, will you?
Here you are.
Thanks. Yes, it was a hard knock. And in a curious place, too.
But it's 15 feet from where we found the body, Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Holmes. I don't see how it could have any connection with Mrs. Gibson's murder.
Well, perhaps it hasn't, but it's a point worth noting. There were no footprints, you say, Sergeant?
None, Mr. Holmes. The ground was as hard as iron. It's been a very dry summer, and we haven't had any rain to speak of.
That's a pity. Well, Sergeant, I'm much obliged to you, and now I think we'll go back to the house.
Right. Caesar will show you where the firearms are.
So, who is Caesar?
Oh, a funny kind of a bloke. Brazilian, I guess.
Brazilian, eh? Like Mrs. Gibson.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. Comes from the same town that she does, as a matter of fact. Something very fishy about him, if you ask me. Now, if you'll excuse me, gentlemen, I'm going to take a little stroll around the grounds. You've started me on a new train of thought in this case, Mr. Holmes.
I'm delighted, Sergeant. Come, Watson, let's get back to the house. I see. And these are all the firearms in Mr. Gibson's possession, eh, Caesar?
Except for the revolver that is missing from the case.
I've never seen such a collection of guns and revolvers in my life.
Mr. Gibson have many enemies, senor. He always sleep with a loaded pistol beside his bed. He's a man of great violence. There have been times when all of us were afraid of him.
Did you ever witness physical violence toward Mrs. Gibson?
No, senor. I cannot say that I have. But I've heard him say many terrible things to her. He would taunt her in front of we servants. I've heard him do it many times.
Thank you, Caesar. That will be all.
Muy bueno, senor.
You know, Holmes, I still think the case against Miss Dunbar looks very black.
I should agree with you if it were not for one fact, the finding of the revolver in her wardrobe.
Upon my soul, Holmes, that seems to me the strongest evidence of all.
I think not, old chap.
I don't quite follow you.
Suppose for a moment that we visualize you in the character of a woman who, in cold, premeditated fashion, is about to murder a rival. Do you mean to tell me that after carrying out so crafty a crime, you'd be so stupid as to forget to fling the incriminating revolver to the bottom of the stream? Would you carefully carry it home and put it in the first place that would be searched, your wardrobe?
Well, perhaps in the excitement of the moment.
No, no, my dear chap. I won't admit that's even possible.
Well, then, if Miss Dunbar didn't shoot Mrs. Gibson, who the devil did?
I hope I can give you the answer to that question, Watson, when we've made one further visit.
Oh, Lord. Where are we going now?
To prison, old chap.
Prison?
Yes. We're going to Winchester Prison to call on Miss Dunbar. I'm certain that the key to this strange mystery lies in her hands.
An hour later, found the two of us sitting in a dank and gloomy cell, talking to one of the most beautiful girls that I've ever seen. Holmes spoke to her, quietly soothing her.
Miss Dunbar, tell us of your true relations with the dead woman.
Oh, she hated me, Mr. Holmes. She hated me with all the passion of her distorted mind.
Please tell us exactly what happened on the evening of Mrs. Gibson's death.
Well, I received a note from her in the morning, a note imploring me to meet her at the bridge after dinner that night. She said she had something important to say to me.
Did you keep that note, Miss Dunbar?
No, Doctor. She asked me to destroy the note, so I burned it in the schoolroom grate. I saw no reason for such secrecy, but, well, I did as she asked.
And yet she kept your reply very carefully. That's interesting. Tell me what happened when you met her that night.
When I reached the bridge, she was waiting for me, but she poured out her whole wild fury and burning horrible words. I did not even answer. I couldn't. She was like an insane woman standing there screaming disgusting insults at me. I put my arms to my ears and rushed away.
Where was she standing when you left her?
Within a few yards of the spot where her body was found later.
And yet, presuming she met her death shortly after you left her, you heard no shot?
No. No, I heard nothing. But I was so upset, Mr. Holmes, that I rushed straight back to my room.
Did you leave it again that night?
Yes. When the alarm came that Mrs. Gibson was dead, I ran out with the others.
This pistol that was found in your room, had you ever seen it before?
Never, Mr. Holmes. I swear.
When was it found, Miss Dunbar?
Next morning, when the police made their search, it was on the floor of my wardrobe where I keep my shoes.
You've no idea how long it had been there?
Well, it hadn't been there the morning before.
I see. Then someone must have come into your room and placed the pistol there in order to incriminate you.
I'm certain of it.
Well, when could they have done that?
Well, it could have been at mealtime, or when I was in the schoolroom with the children.
Yes. Miss Dunbar, on examining the scene of Mrs. Gibson's death, I noticed that a piece of stonework on the underside of the parapet of the bridge had been broken away. Can you suggest any possible explanation for that?
Oh, surely. It must have been a mere coincidence, Mr. Holmes.
Possibly. But why should it appear at the very time of the tragedy and at the very place? Could it possibly be that... Why, yes, of course, idiot. Why didn't I think of it before? Come along, Watson.
Where are we going, Holmes?
Back to Thor Bridge, old fellow, as fast as we can get there.
What have you found out, Mr. Holmes?
The answer to this mystery, I hope, my dear young lady.
Well, Mr. Holmes, you're soon back, yeah? What have you found out?
Tell you in a few moments. You got my message?
Yes, here you are. A bomb twine. What you want it for? I can't imagine.
You'll soon see, Sergeant. Watson, I have some recollection that you usually go armed on these excursions of ours.
Yes, I'm carrying my revolver. Why?
Give it to me, old chap, will you? Thanks. I believe your revolver may have a very intimate connection with the mystery we're investigating.
You're joking!
No, Watson, I'm very serious. We have a test to make. I take the precaution of unloading it. There we are. Now, Sergeant, ball of twine, please.
Wish I knew what you was up to, sir.
I tie one end of the twine, like this, to the handle of the revolver. Sergeant, see if you can find me a heavy stone, will you?
Right you are, sir.
Holmes, what are you doing?
Trying to reconstruct the killing of Mrs. Gibson. It seemed a certainty when it first flashed across my mind in Miss Dunbar's cell. We can but try.
Here's a nice stone, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you, Sergeant. Now, I tie the other end of this twine to the stone. Splendid. Sergeant, will you please take this stone and stretch the twine across the parapet of the bridge there, so that the stone will swing just clear of the water on the other side of the bridge?
Right you are, sir.
I'll stand on the spot where Mrs. Gibson's body was found. That's it, Sergeant. Over the parapet.
All set, Mr. Holmes. The stone's swinging about 8 feet above the water.
Splendid. Now, Watson, watch closely. I raise the revolver to my head.
Careful, Holmes, careful!
Don't worry, old chap, it's not loaded. Now, let us imagine I am the late Mrs. Gibson. I raise the revolver to my head and fire it. Instantly, my fingers release their grip and... There's your answer, Watson.
Great Scott! The revolver flashed back out of your hand, struck the parapet of the bridge, and then the weight of the stone flipped it over into the water.
Was there ever a more exact demonstration? Come on, old fellow.
You're a bluin' magician, Mr. Holmes. That's what you are, a bluin' magician.
Look at that. There's the second chip on the stonework of the parapet here. Same size as the first.
Then the murder of Mrs. Gibson?
Wasn't murder at all. It was suicide.
What?
We can follow the various steps quite clearly. A note was extracted very cleverly from Miss Dunbar. A note would make it appear that she had chosen the scene of the crime. Mrs. Gibson, in her anxiety that the note should be discovered, somewhat overdid it by holding it in her hand to the last. That alone should have excited my suspicions earlier than it did.
Then she stole one of her husband's revolvers
and planted the other one in Miss Dunbar's wardrobe.
Exactly. After discharging one of the cartridges, which she could easily do in the woods without attracting suspicion, she then went down to the bridge, where she contrived this exceedingly ingenious method of getting rid of her weapon. When Miss Dunbar appeared, she used her last breath in pouring out her hatred, and then, when the girl had left, carried out her terrible purpose.
Then the missing revolver.
You'll find it, with the aid of a grappling hook, at the bottom of the stream.
Yes, Sergeant. And don't forget, while you're at it, that my revolver's down there, too.
Don't worry, Doctor. I'll get some grappling hooks right away.
I must say, Holmes, you've solved this case brilliantly.
I disagree, old chap.
Oh, nonsense, but that's ridiculous.
Oh, no, it isn't, old boy. I've been sluggish in my mind. I confess that the chip in the stonework was a sufficient clue to suggest the true solution, and I blame myself for not having obtained it sooner.
Well, Holmes, personally, I agree with the sergeant's opinion of you.
Oh? What was that, old fellow?
You're a bloomin' magician, Mr. Holmes.
Well, Doctor, Holmes really was a magician. That is, if you did find Miss Gibson's revolver and your own in the stream.
Oh, we found them all right. You don't think I'd tell you the story otherwise, do you? What do you take me for, anyway?
Well, you are a gentleman of the old school.
Oh, you're being too...
And you do tell a fine story. Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is adapted from the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Problem of Thole Bridge.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Vintage Voices. Join us next month for Cure That Habit, the first in our three-episode comedy series, Our Miss Brooks. And visit the Vintage Voices website at huntleyradio.com to hear any of our 40 previously recorded radio plays.